You're listening to Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis in for Cynthia Canty. Beyond an impact on the environment, climate change is expected to affect human health, and it already is. A state agency has identified five areas we can see this happening: heat-related illness, breathing problems, waterborne diseases, bug-related illnesses, and even an uptick in carbon monoxide poisoning. Here to talk about all of this is Lori Cameron and Aaron Ferguson. They are with the Michigan Climate and Health Adaptation Program. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about whether or not we are already seeing changes in health because of climate change. Have you seen any indication that things are changing for public health?
I think we are seeing effects on health, and that's been noted internationally and with the U.S. You may be aware that the WHO has declared climate change the existential public health emergency of our lifetimes and of our century. And that certainly is true across the world, where we're seeing extreme weather causing multitudes of deaths. But even within Michigan, we're seeing changes in patterns of disease that can be linked at least partially to some of the changes we're seeing in the climate.
Sure, like what?
Well, for example, people are aware that there's new vector-borne diseases moving into the state, such as Lyme disease and West Nile virus. Now, back when I was a kid, you know, many years ago, these conditions were not seen in the state of Michigan. But as temperatures have warmed and as the environment has changed, it's promoted the spread of mosquitoes and ticks that carry these infectious diseases. And so now certain parts of our state are dealing with emerging threats from Lyme disease and West Nile virus.
It seems like every year when I look at the map of the state where you can find ticks that carry Lyme disease or could carry Lyme disease, it seems like that map, that heat map, is kind of spreading farther and farther out into various parts of the state.
That's correct.
So let's talk about what other things we're seeing. Aside from vector-borne diseases, what else are the main concerns that you're focusing in on?
Both nationally and here in Michigan, we're concerned about just the rise in temperatures and the increase in heat-related illness. Hmm. And you probably are aware of some of the heat waves that have been occurring in Europe this summer and the many deaths associated with that. We don't tend to think of Michigan as being a very hot climate, but we do get extreme heat days, and we do see increases in hospitalizations, in emergency room visits, and even increases in deaths associated with those increasing temperatures.
Aaron, looking at the potential impacts and the places that we're seeing more of a problem, who are the populations that we're focusing in on? Who are you most concerned about?
Yeah, so in general, we're concerned about those that are most vulnerable to these climate impacts. And so those would be those that are elderly, the very young, those that might be experiencing poverty or homelessness. Certainly in urban areas, those that live in those urban areas might be more exposed to those high heat events, because in those urban areas, it tends to get even hotter than in the surrounding areas. And other parts of the state, maybe more in the country, and then even in the urban areas, we see people that are vulnerable to extreme precipitation events. So that's heavy rain in the summer and heavier snow and even ice in the winter, which can cause flooding. So in areas that have older infrastructure, in urban areas, if the stormwater systems aren't designed for the amount of rain that they're seeing, you'll get street flooding, backing up into people's basements, and then closing roads. In rural areas, we see the more socially isolated populations during events that if their transportation routes get cut off, they get cut off from essential needs and potentially emergency services. And that can be a problem for those populations.
So how do we begin to tackle some of these issues in the Great Lakes state? Do we see anything that can be done on the state level?
So at the state level, our program has been working across agencies with our counterparts in EAGLE and MDOT and the DNR to educate them and make them aware of how climate impacts health, and then discuss ways that we can incorporate public health into their programs and projects. And we've taken that approach, and we've also worked a lot at the community level. So our program's been around since 2010, and during that time, we've really focused on helping communities and local health departments and community-based organizations build their capacity to respond to these climate changes and these health impacts from climate change. So some examples of that would be in Detroit. We've been working with the Detroit Health Department and groups and community-based organizations there to help them better plan and respond to both heat and cold events and help the health department build that capacity and help the, even at the neighborhood level, help them raise the awareness of, you know, checking in with their neighbors during these cold and heat events. We've also been working in Marquette County in Michigan's Upper Peninsula with partners at Michigan State University Extension and the Marquette County Health Department to take their quite substantial existing climate plans and help them incorporate the public health components into their existing plans. So that would be things like taking their master plan and how do you incorporate health-based policies into that that would help them adapt to the ongoing climate changes.
Aaron, is it hard to get the public to see public health and health in general as a climate change-related issue?
It can be at first, but I think more communities now are experiencing it firsthand. You know, every spring, it seems like in the southeast Michigan, they're experiencing major flooding events. They saw those types of major flooding events in the Houghton area, in the Upper Peninsula. And in those same years, they might also be experiencing drought. And as Lori alluded to, some of the asthma conditions. So as time has gone on, I think more communities are starting to experience the impacts from that. And that kind of brings them to the table and start asking questions about what can we do to be better prepared for these situations.
And is that really what we need to be discussing, is preparedness for the future, or is there a way to address some of these issues now to reduce or eliminate them altogether?
Oh, I think we definitely need to be responding now to these threats, because the threats are here now. And as Aaron mentioned, people are recognizing these events are occurring now. There are things we can do. There's a lot that can be done on the local level, and even though there is no national policy right now that's addressing these issues, a lot of the mayors across the country and even within our state are moving forward with plans both to try to reduce the pace of climate change by reducing what's called greenhouse gases, such as reducing fossil fuel burning, but also to adapt, and that is to intervene so that the effects that we are seeing now are not harming people. A lot of the mayors and community leaders throughout our state are starting to look at infrastructure very critically to see what do we need to do to prevent these floods from harming people? What do we need to do to prevent the cities from getting so hot in the summer when we have a heat event? And there's actions that can be taken on multiple levels. The healthcare community is also responding. There are groups such as the Physicians for Social Responsibility that are reaching out to their colleagues in the medical profession, educating them to educate their patients about ways to stay safe when it's hot out or when the air quality is bad, and to make the connection that these effects are coming from climate change.
Lorraine Cameron is the principal investigator for the Michigan Climate and Health Adaptation Program. Aaron Ferguson is the program manager of that same program. Thank you both for joining the program today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Let's turn now to who might be most affected by these threats to human health. You likely know the name Abdul El-Sayed from his run for governor in Michigan. But before trying his hand at politics, he was focused on public health as the head of the City of Detroit's health department. He says the links between climate and health reveal some startling inequalities in society. Abdul El-Sayed, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
You argue that communities of color are disproportionately affected by the negative health implications of climate change. Why?
Well, let's think about the history of racism and the way that it's wrapped itself around the places that people have often been forced to live in marginalized communities. And if you go back to post-World War II, and you know that's a part of American history that a lot of folks look back at fondly. But if you look at the record of policy, so much of it was about marginalizing people of color into communities that were less desirable, and then also marginalizing them out of jobs that were less desirable. And even if they had the same jobs, those records of payment were worse. And so you create and perpetuate this systematic injustice. And then when you think about what climate change will do, it will introduce an environmental assault on people. And those who are best able to cope are those for whom wealth and access and comfortable neighborhoods and big houses and stable jobs are most likely to protect them. And for folks who have been systematically marginalized over a long period of time, we're going to see quite the opposite. That means that we have a lot of work to do to be thinking about how to protect these communities from the consequences of climate change.
So do you anticipate that the effect will be environmental, or will it be about access to care?
It'll be both. It'll be both who is most likely to be hurt by both the production of climate change and also the consequences of climate change, and then also who will have access to the means of mitigating those consequences. So if you go to Southwest Detroit, and we have some of the highest concentration of climate change causing gases being emitted from a lot of the factories in that airshed. And the EPA has said that that particular community is in what's called non-compliance, meaning there's too much of the bad stuff in the air. And think about who lives in Southwest Detroit. They tend to be poor, African-American, and Latinx folks. And that's not about the consequence of climate change. That's about the cause of climate change, right? Is that you have these factories that are emitting into the air. And it's easy to explain why that happens. You have systematic redlining over decades that basically shunted poor, low-income, and predominantly people of color into those communities where they were forced to live in the airshed that was being polluted by those corporations. And then on the back end, when we think about these temperature fluctuations, when we think about the increases in what we used to call once in a lifetime or once in 500 year storms, who does it affect, right? Go back to this summer in particular. You had massive flooding where? In Southeast Detroit. And who tends to live there? Low-income people of color. And when we see systematic poverty because of the consequences of systematic racial oppression over a long period of time, well, then even the ability to do something about it on the back end is limited.
Well, let's talk about what this looks like practically. As temperatures warm, how do you see this manifesting?
What we're going to be seeing with climate change, a lot of folks focus on the warming, but it's really about the change in the climate as it tries to respond to an increased amount of greenhouse gases in the air. We're going to see warming, yes, but also colder winters. I mean, if you think about this last year alone, we had both the coldest winter on record and the hottest summer on record in terms of days. And so it's the experience of trying to protect yourself against that. It's also the consequences of increased climate change related gases in the air. So that will cause asthma. It's also the fact that that as storms are more likely to happen, these once-in-a-lifetime storms happen every summer, the consequences of that in terms of lost property, in terms of lost housing, in terms of lost people, right? That affects people's mental health in some pretty profound ways. The amount of insecurity that comes with knowing that all of a sudden your house is gone, you don't have the insurance to be able to pay to fix it, and what that does in terms of displacing people, who is that going to affect most? It's going to affect most likely the most marginalized people in our society.
So you're talking about long-term and short-term health implications.
Yeah.
How does a department even begin to tackle that?
Well...
Yeah, I mean, it's heavy because you're dealing with a fundamental shift in how a city is run. What part of the apple do you bite first?
And this is the point, right? If we are not serious about tackling climate change itself, there's going to be very little that a city, even a state, can do to address the consequences. We have to tackle the crisis at the level which the crisis was created at. And right now, one of the big focuses that we really have to think about is what does it mean to free our energy system from a dependence on oil, stuff that we literally pull out of the ground and then burn into the lungs of our children that then go into the atmosphere and accelerate climate change. That has to be a national level priority, in fact, an international level priority. And it was, except for the international agreements that were meant to govern that, we pulled out of. Why? Because the other problem is that so many of these companies have a huge stake in our politics. And unless we're able to address that problem at the international and national level, there's going to be very little that a city can do, a state can do, right? So much of the funding that they use to do those things in the first place comes from the feds. The way I think about it in terms of what our state ought to be doing right now is, number one, we've got to get serious about playing our part on this issue. So when you think about an issue like Line 5, it's easy to just say, well, we're talking about an oil pipeline in one particular part of Michigan territory. But actually, it has far bigger implications than that. If that oil pipeline were to fail in some way and leak natural gas into the Great Lakes, you're now talking about 21% of the world's fresh water. That's a big deal internationally. All to do what? To protect a system of energy production that forces us to move huge amounts of natural gas so somebody can burn it. We can do better.
But, you know, getting back to the Paris Climate Accord and international agreements, even climate scientists agreed that that wasn't going to go far enough. It was just a start. And yes, it's not great from a climate perspective that we are trying to withdraw ourselves from it. But if we're talking about on the international policy and the national policy perspective, that's a huge mountain that needs to be climbed. But on a state level, a city level, an individual level, are there things that can be done to tackle even the larger issues to
Sure.
tackle the public health issue?
Yeah. So, you know, make no mistake, Michigan is a state of 10 million people. And there's a lot that we as a state can do that I think focuses on driving forward on 100% renewable energy. That as individuals, it means petitioning our government officials to get there. It also means, you know, the classic things: reduce, reuse, recycle. It means making smart choices about investing in mass transit rather than continuing to be wedded to a system of transportation that's focused on every one of us getting into our own car individually and driving 25.4 minutes, which is the average commute time, all the while putting the burn off of fossil fuels into the air. It also means thinking about infrastructure in a real thoughtful way. One of the main challenges we face as a state right now is that our infrastructure is crumbling, but it's got to go beyond the things that we see like roads. It's also got to be thinking about, well, what is our energy grid looking like? How do we move water? And are there ways to do that in a much more efficient way that saves those resources and also protects us? And it's also recognizing that some infrastructure is a lot more important for low-income people of color than others, right? Every time, for example, when it rains and it floods in a community like Detroit, that's an infrastructure issue.
Right.
And we have to be thinking about what is our society-wide investment in protecting the most vulnerable of us by building the infrastructure that would do that.
Abdul Al-Sayed, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.